Many of us started attending a Unitarian Universalist congregation because we disagreed with or wanted to reject some aspect of the heritage or tradition of some other religion that we grew up in. Maybe the church you grew up in had a heritage or a tradition of preaching that if you didn't believe a particular thing in a particular way, that you were going to go to hell. Or maybe you were raised in a tradition that couldn't let go of a heritage that just didn't have room or couldn't accept anyone who wasn't heterosexual and cisgendered and fit into a rigid binary understanding of gender. One of the things I love about Unitarian Universalism is that it values transformation and evolution and growth. We want our tradition to be, as our hymnal says right on the cover, a living tradition. Our Unitarian and our Universalist forebears, as well as our more recent Unitarian Universalist forebears, so often have strived to change and grow in our capacity to be open and welcoming and compassionate. And this has meant taking a look at our heritage and our traditions and reevaluating them now and again. There are things that Unitarian Universalists look back on in our history and heritage, and we wish that different choices had been made. For example, 30 years ago, at the General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalist Association in 1993, in the 250th anniversary of the birth of Thomas Jefferson, a Thomas Jefferson ball was to be held, and everyone was invited to come wearing period clothes to celebrate Thomas Jefferson. And the Unitarian Universalists, who were with the diverse and revolutionary UU ministries, people who identified as people of color, they felt a little disturbed by this. If I'm black, what costume should I wear to the Thomas Jefferson ball? Ouch. I love Unitarian Universalism, and this is an embarrassing story, and I wish different choices had been made. It's hard to look at moments in our heritage like this, and it's really important that we look at moments in our histories and heritage like this. It's important that we hold our heritage and our beloved ancestors in love, and it's important that we don't ignore or get defensive about those moments when different choices should have been made. Maybe it's so difficult to do this because we so often feel encouraged, even pressured, to have no regrets. So try this. If you have a smartphone with you today, why don't you get that out of your pocket for a second or out of your purse? Go ahead. And if you got a music app on it, go ahead and open up the music app. Apple Music, Spotify, Pandora, Bandcamp, whatever it is you use, go ahead and do that. Now in the search window, that's probably a little magnifying glass thing, type in the word no regrets, those two words, no regrets, and search that and see how many songs you get. How many songs? It's probably a lot, right? It just kind of keeps going and going, yeah. Right? One of the things that I notice when I do this is that it's not one really great song that everybody is covering. They're all different. It's the same message again and again and again being told. And it's not just one genre either. They're kind of all over the place. Jazz and folk and blues and rap and R&B. They're all over the place. And if you could do this in different languages, you'd find them all over the world. To live with no regrets. Wow, I bet that must feel what? Powerful? Reassuring? I'm struggling here because I can't really imagine what it must be like to live without regrets. I have lots of regrets. I don't know about you. James Baldwin once observed that though we would like to live without regrets, and sometimes proudly insist that we have none, this is not really possible, if only because we are mortal. Living a mortal life, how can we not feel some what-ifs and if-onlys? That novel called The Midnight Library that we heard a reading from just a moment ago, in that novel, the main character, Nora, gets a chance to explore multiple possibilities for her life. She explores what her life might have been like, what it might be like, if at different points in her life she had made different choices, different decisions. And she doesn't visit just a few what-if lives, and I'm sorry if you haven't read the book, here comes maybe a spoiler or something. She doesn't visit just like a handful of regrets or what-ifs. It seems like she explores, what, hundreds, right? Those of you who have read this, is that right? Is that the feeling that you got? It's like hundreds. And at one point, she's been exploring so many different possibilities that she kind of gets a bit lost. She loses her sense of direction. She loses her sense of herself, actually. She's been working with this librarian in the Midnight Library, and this librarian's been functioning as kind of a guru or guide or something like that for her. And in this moment of crisis when Nora has lost her way, the librarian says this: "You are forgetting who you are. In becoming everyone, you are becoming no one. You are forgetting your root life. You are forgetting what worked for you and what didn't. You are forgetting your regrets." That was the point in this book when I just got fascinated. This idea that forgetting your regrets might be a problem. Up to this point in the book, it seemed like the whole goal has been to find a life without regrets. There's this book of regrets that she's encountering in the library, and it's kind of toxic. She has a tough time even getting near it, and the whole goal seems to be making that book shorter and smaller. But now, Nora is lost, and what can help guide her back to herself are her regrets. So I just started thinking and meditating on this question. What if we need our regrets? What if our regrets are really useful? I mean, if I wanted to know what someone really values, if I knew something about their regrets, I bet you I could say what their values were. It's our values and our relationship that we have with them that define who we are. It's when I can have faith that it is natural, say, for humankind to regret hurting other people or causing pain or distress to others. That's when I have the most hope for humankind. When a person or a people can hurt other people and not feel regret, then something is wrong. A writer named Daniel Pink did a bunch of research into regret, and he came out of it with a renewed sense of hopefulness. He says, "After a few years immersed in the science and experience of our most misunderstood emotion, I've discovered about myself what I've discovered about others. Regret makes me human. Regret makes me better. Regret gives me hope." Maybe it's a little shocking or surprising to hear regret linked with hope. That's not the usual way we think or feel about or experience regret. Regret feels negative, and we resist negativity. Regret is an uncomfortable emotion to feel, and it's natural to resist discomfort. I think we also tend to resist regret because, well, in this country, we have a tendency to believe that only bad people do bad things. And we don't like the thought that we might be bad people. The rabbi Dania Rutenberg says that we can get defensive about the possibility that we should be regretting something when we believe that doing a harmful thing is the same thing as being a bad person. And this is how we get defensive when it comes to acknowledging evidence of racism, for example. Like I think of that Jefferson ball and the way people got defensive around that. Or last spring, the mayor of Saratoga Springs introduced a resolution on restorative justice, and it included an acknowledgement that Saratoga Springs has supported and allowed racism and hate in areas of housing, employment, law enforcement, and other areas of formal and informal life during its history. And the resolution goes on to say, we apologize for this. We acknowledge and apologize for this. In response to the resolution being included on the city council agenda, the local Police Benevolent Association issued a statement on their Facebook page saying, quote, the members of the Saratoga Springs PBA dispute and deny any false idea that its members are racist or allow any laws to be applied in racist ways or based in hate. I can understand the defensiveness there, especially if it feels like that you're being accused of being bad people. And nobody wants to be bad people. And it's hard not to hear an accusation that we're being a bad people, even if the accusation isn't there. Like the resolution doesn't say we're bad people, or that Saratoga Springs is a bad place, or that any of our institutions here are bad. It just says that there's things that have happened that we regret. Daniel Pink, who I mentioned before, he wrote a book called The Power of Regret: How Looking Backward Moves Us Forward. He encouraged us to use a different framing when we experience regret. He says, framing regret as a judgment of our underlying character, who we are, can be destructive. Framing it as an evaluation of a particular behavior in a particular situation, what we did, can be instructive. And this totally makes sense to me when thinking about individuals. If we get bogged down by regret, if we go over and over our regrets excessively, if we think badly about ourselves, this leads to depression and anxiety, and you get stuck in these kinds of loops, and it can adversely affect your hormones and your immune system. There's studies on this. A writer in The Atlantic magazine who's been writing a series of pieces on, what does he call them, How to Live? I forget the name of the series. It's something like that. His name is Arthur Brooks, and he confesses that, for me, ruminating on regret is anathema to sleep. And he actually cites a study where they gathered some people together, and some of those people, they said, think about something in your life that you really regret. Now go to bed. Shocker, those people had a harder time falling asleep than the control group. Oh my goodness. Oh. We need to achieve some distance or perspective from our regrets. If we can have that, if we can have a little perspective on it, then the regret isn't an accusation as much as it maybe is a guide, something that clues us into what our values really are and how we really want to be in relationship to those values. Regret can be a practical and a spiritual asset. The science and his research tells Daniel Pink that regret is not dangerous or abnormal, a deviation from the steady path to happiness. It is healthy and universal, an integral part of being human. Regret is also valuable. It clarifies. It instructs. Done right, it needn't drag us down. It can lift us up. And I think this also works when thinking about the heritage and histories beyond ourselves as individuals, histories as communities or institutions or countries. Honoring our heritage does not mean striving to simply repeat it over and over again, relive it. It doesn't mean whitewashing it. Honoring our history means being honest about it and learning from it. The organizers of that ball, back at General Assembly in 93, those who were raising objections to it and the leaders who were putting it together sat down in a room together and talked with one another and listened to one another. And the ball did end up going forward. It still was held, but there was a protest outside of it too. And over the years, as those UUs have continued to listen to one another and maintain their faith and conviction that just because you've done something that maybe you didn't realize the impact that it was going to have, it doesn't mean you're a bad person. It just means maybe you didn't realize the impact it was going to have. As they've talked with one another, they've become colleagues and a pair of them close friends even. That moment has been a moment in our UU history and heritage that we have learned from. We honor our heritage when we take it as an opportunity to transform and to grow. As the new statement of UU Values and Covenant says, openness to change is fundamental to our Unitarian and Universalist heritages. Never complete and never perfect. What if our heritage is learning to appreciate regret as evidence of our yearning to be better humans? Our yearning to be generous, our yearning to be more loving, our yearning for every person's right to flourish with inherent dignity and worthiness. That gives me hope. May it be so.